I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Ballot Talks on Radio Times. There's a mayor's race in Philadelphia, and whoever is elected will have a long to-do list, and at the top of that list is education. It's been a tumultuous few years for the city schools with massive budget deficits, teacher and staff layoffs, school closures, contract conflicts between the teachers' union and the School Reform Commission, and funding tensions between district and charter schools. Today on the show, advice for the next mayor about how to improve education for all children in the city, underscoring all children in the city. And we have some guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Let me introduce them to you. William Wade is the principal of the Promise Academy at the Martin Luther King High School. William Wade, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here.
Also with us is Christine Carlson. She's a public school parent. She has two kids who attend the Greenfield Elementary School. And she's the founder of the Greater Center City Neighborhood Schools Coalition. Christine Carlson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
And our third guest, Kate Shaw, is Executive Director of Research for Action, and that's a nonprofit educational research organization here in Philadelphia. Kate Shaw, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
And we have a third guest, fourth guest, actually, who is hopefully will be here in the next couple of minutes. Kate, if I can begin with you, and I just want to make sure that we know that the next mayor, whoever it is not a king, is not a superintendent of schools, is not the head of the School Reform Commission. But what powers do you think the next mayor or any mayor has in this city when it comes to schools?
Well, the mayor of Philadelphia actually has a lot less power than mayors in many other large cities, in large part because he or she will have little control over who sits on the SRC, and also because, of course, we don't have taxing authority in Philadelphia. And so taking a look at what some other mayors have done in other large cities, I think there's some lessons to be learned. And one thing that we know, and Tom Menino from Boston is a great example of this, is that stability and long-term support is really important to any kind of positive change that happens in schools. Educational reform is complex, it's very difficult, and it requires sustained attention, and it requires stability and leadership. So anything a mayor can do to bring in strong leadership and then maintain stable, strong leadership is going to be critically important to the well-being of Philadelphia schools over time.
Have we had that in recent years?
Not so much, Marty. But Superintendent Knight-Hite has been here for several years now, and you can already see the benefit of having a strong and secure leader in place.
Let me turn to you, William Wade. You're the principal of the Promise Academy at the Martin Luther King High School. Mm-hmm. What's the top piece of advice you would give the next mayor of Philadelphia?
Well, I think the next mayor really needs to be tuned in to the needs of the students and the families of Philadelphia. And in reading about some of the candidates, I think they are and even getting more educated every day. But they have to know the needs. That what are we doing in the trenches with the students? What the work that is happening so that they can align the necessary resources or lobby Harrisburg for those. I think if they know that, and even though they don't have direct control of the SRC, that voice will be a positive influence on the decisions that are made with the SRC.
I don't mean to make you a stand-in, Christine, for all parents who send children to public schools here in Philadelphia, but from your perspective, what's your top piece of advice?
My top piece of advice would be to really support the neighborhood schools and realize the importance of a neighborhood school on the community, especially an elementary school, that it should be an anchor of a community. And really to get in and know those schools and know the principals, not to rely entirely on what they hear at 440 North Broad, but to really get in on the ground and talk to the actual people and understand that neighborhood schools come in all shapes and sizes, and each one might have a different solution, but they really need to support them.
Are you saying they don't understand what's going on, that a mayor doesn't necessarily understand what's going on inside of a school?
I think if they actually went into the schools and talked to principals and students, they would have a different idea of what was going on.
And tell us just a bit about the coalition, how you came together and why.
Our coalition started with the previous gubernatorial administration when all the budget cuts came, and we tried to get together and basically have some force behind a group rather than one school, have 11 schools. And these schools came about through a survey that Center City District did of the 2010 census that just define this new area of Greater Center City, which is, you know, not only just what people would think the normal Vine to Pine, but really expands well beyond that. And we really work together to try to take advantage of what's happening in Philadelphia with young families coming in and really make these neighborhood schools, elementary schools, viable choices for families to keep them from leaving the city.
And what's a neighborhood school for our listeners, Kate?
A neighborhood school is a school that enrolls students that live in the catchment area around it. So it's not a special admit school. It's not a non-neighborhood charter school. It's a school that serves the students in the surrounding area.
And what do all children need, especially in a city like Philadelphia, which does have a high poverty rate, for instance? What do children need to get off to a good start?
Well, I think one of the things that we're finally getting consensus around is the importance of high-quality early childhood education. And it's really heartening to see people on both sides of the aisle, you know, pretty much all the mayoral candidates, and also, of course, in Harrisburg, folks are really getting behind the notion that we have to greatly expand access to high-quality early childhood education. We know that that's the single best investment we can make in the long-term success of our students. And so the degree to which we can coordinate the existing early childhood education that's in Philadelphia and then expand the quality and access to it, that's the best long-term investment that we can make.
What, beginning at the age of four or something like that? Three, maybe?
Yeah, the earlier the better, really. And it's particularly impactful for kids who come from really poor backgrounds because enriched early childhood education just gets them on the right path. Makes it much more likely they're going to be reading on grade level at an early age, which we know is critically important to their long-term success. There's really no downside to it.
Well, let me get you back in on the conversation, William Wade.
Okay.
And you know, you don't teach young children. This is a high school. Do you see some of the problems of not having a good enough education for children as they make their way to high school?
I do. Excuse me. Literacy is at the forefront of everything right now, especially in early childhood education. So that's why the district is making a strong push to make sure that our young people are literate by the age of eight. But studies show that if they are, that they will have an easier path as far as mastering the content moving forward. Of course, when they get to high school with the new Common Core state standards, it's very rigorous. But it's very clear and concise what they need to do, and that's if they are already literate. Now, in a perfect world, we would get everyone who is already on grade level, but we're not. So we have to spend a lot of time putting things in place to help our students get to grade level so that we can start delivering that content at very high levels to them. And so that's our challenge. So those things are very clear. It's very clear that we need more resources in those areas in early childhood education as well as at the middle school level so that we're not starting, in some cases, we're getting students at the high school level that are on fourth and fifth grade reading levels. So that makes our work even harder when we're trying to deliver a chemistry class or an Algebra 2 class. And these are the things aligned directly with the state standards and the Common Core standards that industry and colleges have said this is what they need to be successful to move on to the next level. So we can, in Philadelphia, if we put emphasis on early childhood education and focus all of our resources, as many as possible, and find some talented folks to lead that charge, then we're going to help our case for many years to come. And that's stopped in the last few years.
Christine, let me turn to you because your children attend elementary school.
They do.
Obviously, the focus on early childhood education, but also on elementary schools as well, making sure that all children get a good start.
Right.
Your kids go to Greenfield. You know, it's a really good public school. How can we make that possible for all children in the city?
Well, I that's what I'd say. Greenfield is the elementary school that every elementary school should be. And we're very fortunate that we live in that catchment and that our kids can attend that school. But the pre-K is important. I think you'll find, you know, a lot of when you look at our kids going into kindergarten, they really need to have gone through preschool because when they leave kindergarten in a district school, ideally, they're going to be reading and writing. They're not learning their ABCs or how to count. They need to do some real work, and so that when they're in first grade, they're ready to go. So the more kids we can get at that level when they start kindergarten, the better it will be for for them and everybody.
You know, it's hard to kind of pull out, Kate, education from everything else in the city, but this is a city with a high rate of poverty. Mm-hmm. What's the impact of poverty on educating children in the city?
It's profound. We know that from, you know, decades of research. We also know that, you know, the correlation between standardized test scores and poverty is extraordinarily high. In other words, the poorer you are, the less well you do on standardized test scores. And yet that's how we're judging our schools. And that seems to be a little bit heavy-handed given what folks like William are dealing with when they're getting kids in the door that are reading, you know, multiple grade levels below. But there are things that we can do to sort of make up for some of the difficulties that students who live in poverty deal with. And one of the most important things we can do is to extend the learning day by providing high-quality, academically-oriented after-school programs.
Ah.
And those programs are happening all across the city. They don't really get a lot of attention, but when they're done well and when students attend them consistently, we see real impact on students' academic performance. We see strong impact on attendance, which is highly correlated with academic performance. So even in, you know, we're one of the poorest large cities in the country, but right. even here, there are things we can do by sort of pulling together and making sure that we can support and extend the work that's happening in schools.
Let me turn to you, William. And I saw on some information about Martin Luther King that about 90% of the students either get free lunch or reduced cost
yes.
lunch, which tells us there are a lot of low-income children who attend your school.
Right. And just like Kate said, that creates several layers of challenges that we accept and we know when we sign on for the job to work in urban neighborhood high schools that we're going to be plagued by some things that are directly correlated with poverty. And that's, in many cases, absent parents or parents that are present, but they have other priorities like eating, and they don't have time
several
to.
Jobs,
and
maybe.
Several jobs. That's what I meant, the eating part. They have to work, and they have an obligation first to their families along those lines, and they're not searching for the best educational opportunities for their children, and some of their children suffer from behavioral health issues, and they don't know how to align themselves with the proper services for their child to help them do better in school. Poverty creates higher crime rates. It's a direct correlation in our neighborhoods that we deal with young people that are part of the judiciary system here in the city, that it's just getting in the way of learning. And if we can help put some things in place to remove those obstacles, then we will be better moving forward.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. In fact, the start of a series of weekly shows, we are pulling out important issues facing the city and that will be facing the next mayor of the city, whoever it is. And today we are focusing on education, ensuring that all children in the city get a quality education. William Wade is the principal of the Promise Academy at Martin Luther King High School. Kate Shaw, executive director of research for Action. Christian Carlson, a public school parent, founder of the Greater Center City Neighborhood Schools Coalition. We're going to take a very short break. Get back to our conversation. You can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And in this edition of Ballot Talks on Radio Times, we're debuting a series of weekly interviews about some of the issues that will be facing the next mayor of Philadelphia. And I think everyone agrees that education is the city's most important challenge. And again, our guests are William Wade, Kate Shaw, and Christine Carlson. And again, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What advice would you have for the next mayor of Philadelphia? Kate, let me go back to you, but I also want to hear from our other guests as well. The city, the district has been through a pretty tumultuous few years. Has, from your perspective, has the district sort of righted itself and sort of made it through perhaps the most tumultuous last couple of years? I know it's facing a bit of a budget deficit, but does it feel more stable, to use some of the words that you were using before?
I think that the stability of senior leadership is really important. But, you know, I think the district has, I mean, I think the catastrophic cut in education funding has really harmed the district and the schools, the neighborhood schools in particular, in ways that I'm not even sure we're all completely aware of. And I think it's a heroic thing that people like William do, to go into those schools every day and to do the best that they can with such little resources. But of course, it's great news that we have a new governor who is so supportive of education and wants to increase funding. And it's also really great news that we have a new Secretary of Education that comes from an urban school district, worked in Philly, was superintendent in Lancaster. And I think that there's no substitute for that granular knowledge of what schools need, particularly what poor school districts need. And I think they're right on target in pushing for more money, and then also to spend those resources in way that are, you know, evidence-based and proven to improve the quality of education.
Christine, I'm curious about what the money crisis has meant, not just for Greenfield, but for the other schools in this coalition.
Right. I mean, with all of the schools, it has forced tremendous cuts, and some schools like Greenfield have parents that can raise money, which I know is completely unfair to the system. So I think when you talk about a mayor coming in and yes, he's not going to have very much control over the school system, but I still think we need a mayor and a council who will start to accept responsibility, more responsibility for funding the school system. They need to find more revenue from the city, recurring revenue, so that the district doesn't have to go back year after year.
And the idea, I mean, there is a possibility of some money from, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but property tax increases.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's necessarily going to fly or not.
I don't know, but at least, like Kate said, for the first time in a long time, I'm really feeling optimistic. I'm feeling optimistic because we do have a governor who has made education a priority. This whole mayoral race, really, education is the issue that everyone is talking about. So it's really in the forefront, and I think that people recognize the importance. And I'm also seeing outside of that, with far beyond the 11 schools that I started working with, there are groups forming all over the city who really want to dig in and support their neighborhood schools. And it's not just people with kids. It's communities. It's neighborhood associations. It's companies. So there's a real emphasis on making this district better from the ground up.
Do you share that optimism, William?
I do. We actually showed everyone during these tough times that, when I say we, the outside funders that have supported the neighborhood high schools and other schools in the city, to make sure that we have a collection of successful schools, even though we were tremendously underfunded by our state government. Several organizations stepped up to help fund our causes, and I don't want to start naming them, there's so many, but the Limbeck Foundation and the Philadelphia School Partners and several other organizations have stepped up and said, we think it's worth our while to invest in these children. So now that we have new governor in place, new superintendent of education, we're going to have another mayor in place. So I think you cannot ignore the fact that our schools are worth funding because of organizations like Research for Action have proven that some of those things that we need funding for, and that is the additional hours in school, the extended day, more resources for our special needs students. Those are some of the things that have been funded. And if we keep pushing along those lines, we're going to see some immediate impacts in the student outcomes.
Do you have nurses? Do you have counselors at Martin Luther King?
I do. I have two nurses.
How many students?
But not every day. I have 1,100 students.
Two nurses for 1,100 students.
And we had, because of we're a Promise Academy, we had some extra funding in place. And we have proven since the beginning of the Promise Academy movement that we were worth the investment in the funding, because we made immediate gains when we did have the funding the first year that we opened. And we're showing that we can still make those gains even though our funds have been reduced.
Is it about, as you said, Kate, more money but well invested?
Yeah. I mean, there's no substitute for adequate finances. And one of the most important things that I think the entire city needs to get behind is the move towards a fair funding formula that will drive dollars to where they're needed most. And so in a funding formula such as the one that's being proposed, students with higher needs would get more money. So poor kids would get more money. You know, special ed kids would get more money. You know, students that really need more resources would get them under this formula. And so, yeah, it's really important, but that money needs to be invested wisely in schools. And folks like William know how to spend money to get the kinds of results that we're looking for. And so, you know, having high quality leaders in place in individual schools is one of the single most important things that we can do. And anything that the district and the mayor and our surrounding colleges and universities can do to produce and then support high quality school leaders, it's going to be it's going to reap benefits for years to come.
I noticed, William, also at Martin Luther King, about a third of the students are special needs students or special education students.
Yes, ma'am. We have the third largest special needs population in the city, widely because we're the largest high school option in Northwest Philadelphia, outside of some of the charter offerings, but we're the largest, and we have a very good special needs program. And about 70% of my staff, they are dual certified. So they have content area certification as well as special education certification. So they are trained to offer very creative lessons. They are trained to go in and offer the differentiated instruction that our diverse learners need. But those things are not free. So those are some of the things that we have to duplicated. Well, I have people that are dual certified. I had to go to that option versus the co-teaching model, having the special ed person in the room along with the regular content person, which we had that when we first started the Promise Academy movement. But I had to create two teachers in one because of the budget crisis.
To you, Christine, you said, you know, you're part of a coalition, a number of parents having the kind of wherewithal to make up for some of the budget shortfalls. Not fair. Not all parents can do that. How do you get, I guess, the kind of parent involvement across the city? And do you think a mayor can help make that happen?
Well, I certainly think a mayor can help that happen. And one of the things that a mayor can do and programs like yours can do is highlight the positive things that are happening in our schools. There are many great things happening in our schools, and unfortunately, the only thing that the press picks up is when something bad happens. But I think a mayor would be able to do that. To Kate's point, yes, I think you do need to spend the money differently. I don't know how much a mayor can be involved in helping resolve this conflict and tension with the teacher's contract and the SRC right now, but I think it's very important to get that resolved, to respect our teachers. Yet personally, I believe more in the principal autonomy model. So I do believe in a longer school day. So I think that some of the work rules do need to be changed, without throwing our teachers under the bus.
I hear you, and under a school bus, obviously.
Yes.
To you, though, Kate, is it true that there are too many negative stories about Philadelphia schools, whether they're charter, whether they're public? There certainly are plenty. We've done our share. But are we missing the good news that comes out of the city?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you hear stories. You can, if you're listening, you can hear stories about success throughout the city all of the time. And as I said, I think some of what we hear about how our principals and teachers are handling their situation given the budget crisis is really nothing short of heroic, and it would be great to hear more about that for sure. On the other hand, highlighting some of the problems is also a way to sort of push a political agenda that would result in more resources, and so I think that there's a balance that needs to be met.
Well, that's Kate Shaw. She's the executive director of Research for Action. That's a nonprofit educational research organization here in Philadelphia. Also with us is Christine Carlson. She's a public school parent. Her two kids attend a Greenfield Elementary School, and she's the founder of the Greater Center City Neighborhood Schools Coalition. William Wade is the principal of the Promise Academy at the Martin Luther King High School. And this is Ballot Talks on Radio Times, the first of a series of weekly conversations about important issues facing the city, facing the next mayor, and of course, nothing more important than educating all the children in the city, giving them all a good education. And it looks like our fourth guest, unfortunately, will not be able to make it, and I regret that because she's been involved in a charter school here in the city. We wanted to make sure that that was part of the conversation, but sometimes things do happen. And we have comments here at Radio Times at WHYY.org, a tweet from Morgan. Realistically, how do we improve Philly education without reducing poverty in Philadelphia? That's something I put to you, Kate. But is there a workaround? You know?
Well, we have to try to do that. We have to do the best we can. There are things, I think, that a mayor and a state legislature and a governor can do to help reduce poverty over the long run. But in the meantime, kids are showing up in school every single day. And so the challenge is, what can we do now to help address some of the issues that these kids have when they walk in the door? And that's where I think we look towards early childhood education that's of high quality. We look towards after-school programming that can give kids a safe and productive place to be after school and give them homework help and provide lots of benefits to them. You know, but one of the things that William has pointed out that I think is so important, and also that Christina's pointed out, is that it's going to take more than state government. It's going to take more than city council. It's going to take lots of different kinds of people, business community, colleges and universities, parents, to really get behind our schools and to keep pushing, because administrations come and go, and you need sustained pressure from folks that are not worried about reelection.
We were trying to do this show and not pit, you know, the district schools versus the charter schools, but also knowing that it's been a contentious issue. But I wondered to you, Christine, and also to you, William, which is there a way to find some kind of common ground? If the goal is to get all children a good education in the city, can we find that in the choice between a charter school, a district school?
I'm so glad you asked that, Marty. I am not opposed to charter schools per se, and you can have a philosophical discussion on it. The issue right now, though, is financial. And the way the system is set up now, whenever a new charter seat opens, it cannibalizes the district funding formula. So that has got to be resolved before we can even have the philosophical discussion. But in my opinion, there's no school choice if every neighborhood school isn't a viable choice. So if your neighborhood school isn't, if you don't consider it to be a choice and you apply for a charter school, you're taking a chance. You really don't have choice. So charter schools may have a place, especially if they have a specific purpose, but they should not be in lieu of a good neighborhood school.
Do you want to weigh in on that, William?
I agree. I'm not against charter schools, but we have to definitely level the playing field, especially the equity in funding. We are starting to resemble some charter schools as far as autonomy, the autonomy to create.
This is the Promise Academy.
The Promise Academies and a lot of the neighborhood high schools that are not, and other schools that are not Promise Academies. We as principals are being given the autonomy to create. Of course, we can be more autonomous if we had more funding to create and go out and search for the talented people to run these programs and folks that are committed to make sure that the student outcomes are what we're looking for, similar to what happens in the charter schools. They really don't, their hands are not tied around the talent piece. And the teacher training is pristine. And we're doing that also.
For charters?
For both now. Okay. We have some real high standards that we've set in public schools, but they mirror what has been happening in charters for a while. And we're starting to attract the talented people, the school leaders as well as the teachers, that know that we must embed training every day. Professional development is a must. We must get better every day, and we must learn from what the numbers, the data is telling us, and create better student outcomes. And so you see a big part of that in charter schools. It's just measurement, and planning, and we're doing a lot of that now.
Let me turn to you, Kate, and you talk about the importance of stability, and I'm thinking about the importance of recruiting good teachers. Are good teachers attracted to a place that still feels like it's in flux, especially when you could teach in a suburban school and probably get paid a fair amount more money?
Right. I mean, one of the things we know about Philadelphia, and I think, again, this is true with a lot of large urban districts, is that recruitment is not often the biggest problem. It's retention.
Right.
So you can get teachers in, but we all know that the recruitment process has been a little less than
perfect. Stellar.
Yes.
Good.
But what we see happening again and again is that teachers come to Philadelphia, they get a few years under their belt, and then many of them do leave for better resourced school districts, or even within the district, they leave for better resource schools. And so I think that's a major problem. And when a school district like Philadelphia is getting the kind of sustained bad press that it's been getting, not just locally but nationally, it's going to have an effect on whether or not we can attract high-quality teachers. And then, you know, typically when they come to a school district like Philadelphia, Philadelphia invests a lot of time and resources to helping a new teacher become a good, strong teacher. Those resources are lost when those teachers leave the district and go to another school district.
Christine, you want to weigh on this? About a minute before our second break, but go ahead.
Yes, it's important, and I think it's important for teachers to come in to be able to apply for the jobs that they want to apply for and have the individual principals hire the teachers that they would like to hire for their particular school. And I think the principals can build a team then, and it would serve all of the schools better than making it more like a rotating door out of the lower performing schools into the higher ones.
Is that a viable option, Kate?
I think the devil's in the details there. Yeah.
I mean, it depends on a good principal, obviously, making smart hires.
It absolutely does, and it depends on all kinds of things with regard to teacher contracts. And, you know, I think that's another conversation, but I certainly believe that building a strong and, again, consistent team of people who know the students well, who know the community well, who work well with a school leader is, you know, critically important to a high-performing school.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. It's Ballot Talks on Radio Times, and we're taking a look at the continuing school crisis in Philadelphia, but also talking about the fact that there are some bright signs and asking our panel of guests about the advice that they would give the next mayor of Philadelphia on addressing some of these city school challenges. And talking with Kate Shaw, with Christine Carlson, and with William Wade. You can join our conversation. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times, and we are talking about some of the problems, the potential solutions, and where the next mayor should put his or her attention when it comes to educating children in this city. And again, talking with Kate Shaw, Executive Director of Research for Action. That's a nonprofit educational research organization here in Philadelphia. William Wade is the principal of the Promise Academy at the Martin Luther King High School. And Christine Carlson is a public school parent. Her two kids attend Greenfield Elementary School. And she's the founder of the Greater Center City Neighborhood Schools Coalition. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. And we're framing this conversation about what advice you or our guests might give the next mayor about how to address some of these educational challenges here in the city of Philadelphia. Let me get James from, looks like Langhorne, to join us. James, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's clear that the school district itself has been squeezed as much as it can to find money out of the staff and supplies. Do you think it would be reasonable for any mayor to ask the other city unions, the firefighters, the police, and municipal workers, to give something back in their contracts, since they're all, you know, part of the city and they all have an interest in the school district doing well?
Well, that's an interesting proposal. It's hard to imagine, I have to say, James, and even looking at my guests, hard to imagine that there would be givebacks, and there's still negotiations going on with the teachers' union in Philadelphia. But I guess if I can take his question and broaden it out a bit, which is, and to you, Kate, which is, if all of us either who work or live here in the city, if we took an interest in children and making sure that children were educated, could we get some improvement for that experience for those kids?
Yeah, and I think sort of expanding on what the caller said, I certainly don't want to speak specifically about other unions in the city, but I do think there's a larger question of what the responsibility is of our business community, our colleges and universities, our large nonprofits like museums, etc. You know, I think a mayor can do a really great job of bringing those kinds of organizations together and really compelling them to provide sustained and consistent support for the schools. And I'm not trying to imply that those entities aren't already doing that, but I wonder if a mayor can coordinate and sort of create a strategy that would create more long-term lasting impact for the city schools and to help buffer sort of some of the political ups and downs and the fiscal ups and downs that happen when there's a leadership change or a fiscal crisis at the state or even in the city.
What do you think about that, William?
I agree. It's total buy-in by all the citizens, and a great mayor will be able to get everyone to rally around those points. We have big corporations here, Comcast being one of them. I'm not sure what they're doing already. I'm not saying they're not doing anything. But we talked earlier about creating pipelines. If we can create pipelines for our students' programs from school to work and careers, and if the mayor can make that happen with the big organizations and the colleges and universities, and then the firefighters union, police, they will say, hey, I want to be a part of this. Even before the teachers union, because they are all taxpaying citizens, they would want to be a part of something that creates long-term, sustained, successful scenarios for our students. And I've seen this happen. And you saw in my bio that I worked in Memphis and I worked in Atlanta public schools. And those two mayors, when I was in Atlanta, was Shirley Franklin. She's a Philadelphian. She went to Girls High. She was the mayor of Atlanta, and she created pipelines. She created pipelines with colleges. She created Coca-Cola is the biggest industry in Atlanta. She created programs with them. The former mayor of Memphis, Willie Harrington, did the same thing. But he was also superintendent of schools, so he was definitely vested before he became mayor. And he's still doing things. He's not even in the mayor's office. But those are some former mayors of urban areas that the next mayor could really meet with them, and they can really be great advisors on how to appropriately do that and how to get buy-in from everyone so that we're not thinking self, self, self. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking a long-term goal. When I first landed here, I noticed how this city was so adult-friendly and not student-friendly, and that was the biggest difference in the two. So it was really like being in a different place. But my only place is Martin Luther King, and I'm trying to do that in my small catchment. But if that can be duplicated across the city, we will see great gains and long-term gains also.
Go ahead, Kate.
So one of the things that I wanted to note, picking up on what William is saying, is that my organization has been doing some research in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District, and they have an initiative there called Project Lift. And Project Lift is a $60 million initiative funded by the business community focused on the lowest performing schools in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
Wow.
Only those schools.
Wow.
And I know.
$60 million.
$60 million. And it's a sustained effort to provide those schools with the resources, the talent, the technology that they need to really turn those schools around. And it's an extraordinary thing to see. And I would love to see something like that happen here in Philadelphia, because, again, there may be businesses and nonprofits all over the city that are giving to individual schools, but there doesn't seem to be sort of a coordinated strategy to make sure that the right schools and the right kids are getting the resources so that every school can be a greenfield.
You want to weigh on this, Christine?
I do, because it goes to the point of not enough people in Philadelphia are invested in the public school system. And I can get criticized because I always talk about wanting the middle class to stay. But I truly believe that if the district had more people on all different scales involved in the schools, having interest in the school, having a stake in the schools, it would have a lot more political power, and it wouldn't have quite the funding issues that it does now. People like to compare the spending per student from Philadelphia to Lower Merion.
And
I wonder if, you know, one of the reasons Lower Merion has these schools that get well funded is because everyone that lives in Lower Merion sends their kids to the schools. Now, granted, yes, there's private schools, and I'm sure there's some parochial schools and things like that. But on the whole, your whole professional class is sending their children to the public schools, so the whole community is invested in it. And I can't help thinking that that would be the same for Philadelphia. The more we widen the sphere of people whose kids go to the schools or grandkids go to the schools, the more it will help the district and all the kids.
Well, and we also know, Kate, and to you, William, which is the important role that parents play. Involved parents in their children's education can probably make all the difference in the world.
It will make all the difference. Christian is doing a great job. I wish I had, all my parents was as in tune to the needs of the students and as aware to what was going on. But unfortunately, we don't. Mm. But if we can if we can try to get as many as possible, every involved parent makes a world of a difference. But in some cases, we can't wait on that. We can't lean on. We have to still work for the child.
So, go ahead, Kate.
One of the ways, I mean, it's challenging, as we've already noted, when we have parents who might be working two or three jobs, or parents who are not English language speakers. It's difficult to find ways to get all kinds of parents involved. But there are some school models that are emerging called community schools that basically co-locate health services and support services for parents in the schools, meet their needs, and also bring the parents into the schools on a more regular basis. And in that way, you know, engage lots of different kinds of parents, just in the, you know, sort of, and as Christine was pointing out, the schools become sort of a building block of the community and a centerpiece of a community. So there are school models out there that sort of meet parents where they are and engage them in that way.
And kind of beyond the parent-teacher conference.
Absolutely.
From my own experience, I know it can be a little daunting. Did you want to add to that, William?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, then fair enough. Let me see what Walter from West Philadelphia has to say. Walter, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
I think this is a false narrative that, you know, increasing funding is going to improve the situation. With a district that with a $2.5 billion budget has fewer students, fewer schools than it did 20, 30 years ago, still can't get the job done, giving them more money is not going to do a damn thing.
Well, let me ask you, Walter, do you think it seems right and fair that a school for 1,100 children have two nurses?
They should have nurses. I want to know, what are you doing with the money you're getting now?
Well,
why isn't this being allocated?
Well,
it's not as if we're spending, when you say we're spending money on education, instead of spending money on education, what you're really spending money on is salaries. You're spending money on pensions. You're spending money on the real estate. You're spending money on buses.
Well, but Walter, that's how, I mean, teachers need salaries.
They need
buildings.
You're not buying more books. Hold on,
let me jump in, Walter, because you're not right on some of this stuff. And if I can just toss it to Kate Shaw here, knows more about schools than I do.
Well, I just want to point out the unbelievably rigorous, decades-long body of evidence that shows unequivocally that money matters in education. I certainly don't believe that throwing more and more and more and more money with no attention to how the money's spent is the solution. But if you do not have adequate resources, you cannot adequately educate children. And nobody who's read the evidence would argue anything but that.
I mean, teaching is a very people-centered occupation. There are a lot of people. Did you want to weigh in on that, Christine?
Well, I just would like to say you can buy all the books you want to buy with as much money as you want to spend on them, but if you don't have a good teacher to use them, they're just a tool. You need the people to actually educate the children.
There are, though, failing schools in this city. I mean, there are schools where children, you can see, you can look at the test scores, and you can see they need a lot of work. What do you think, William? And again, we're sort of framing this around what the next mayor should do, but what should we do to address that issue?
Well, I think that's connected to what we were discussing with the last caller. This is America. And we work with a very strong tax base, probably larger than any country. And if public school is being funded, we need public school to be funded fairly. We can't start saying we don't need, meaning urban schools and big cities, we don't need funding to do more with our students and to do more for our students when other areas that are more affluent, they're getting the funding and more. Secretary of Education was here recently, and he stated that. And he said, Pennsylvania, we are in last place with funding our public education. And you're going to see a negative impact when that happens. So equitable funding is important. Mm. And the mayor needs to talk about that big time. This is number one goal. I think the next mayor is going to be elected due to he or she, what he or she is going to do for education. And I think they're going to look at what he or she has done for education. Where's the, what platform have they been standing on? And for the funding, the equitable funding of education, we talk so much about the achievement gap with our young people, our learners, our EAL learners, our children of color. But it's more, it should be a conversation about the investment gap that has always existed. We've never had a level playing field. And I mentioned that subgroup because a large portion of that subgroup is Philadelphia. So that's what we have. We're talking about Philadelphia education right now. And a large portion of those students are not educated in special admit schools and not educated in charter schools. They're educated in our neighborhood schools. And if we don't put a vested interest in them, we're not going to see the results that we need. And it takes money to get talent. Well, it takes money to get talent, period.
And Kate, you talked about the importance of money, but the importance of spending it wisely. So if we're talking about schools that are underperforming, not for whatever reason able to get kids in education, what do we do? What does the mayor do? What does the city do?
Well, I'm looking at William again because he runs a Promise Academy. So the reason that the school is a Promise Academy is because it was chronically underperforming. And resources and talent were brought into the school. The school was invested in. And this, in my own organization, did research in the first year of existence of the Promise Academies that showed that the schools were making significant gains with that kind of sustained attention to resources and talent. But there is no silver bullet. It takes sustained attention to take a school that has been chronically underperforming, figure out why it was, because different schools underperform for different reasons, and then address those problems. I think just shutting down low-performing schools is often not the solution to the problem. It's really destabilizing to communities, as we saw the last time around when we had, 30 or so schools closed. I don't think that's always the solution, but I think, investing resources wisely and identifying the talent and the leadership capacity that's needed to pull a school together, to pull a community together, to rally behind that school. I think, Williams shows that those kinds of things can really make a difference.
We're almost out of time here, Christine, but I want to go back to you. And you said early on you felt optimistic, wildly optimistic, cautiously optimistic about schools, education here in Philadelphia?
I think it's somewhere between the two. I'm certainly not wildly optimistic, but I think I've moved beyond the cautionary part. I really do feel good about things. And because of the mayoral gubernatorial funding budgets that are coming up, and I know we're not going to get everything that they're asking for, but the fact that it's such a focus, and from what I see out in the schools with all these communities starting to really gather around their schools and support them, I really do feel optimistic.
Giving you the last word, 30 seconds, William, go ahead.
Well, if everyone rallies around, not only the community schools, but the whole city, I think the mayor will get the picture very clear. And they know about our efforts at Martin Luther King High School and how Pastor Waller he does everything with E9 Tabernacle, Art Hayward, State Center, Cindy Bass, Stephen Kinsey. They have done a lot to educate everyone in our area. That's why we see the positive results that we get. So the mayor has some great advisors around him. Whoever the next mayor is, I just hope they listen.
Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Ballot Talks on Radio Times. A very important conversation. William Wade, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And he's the principal of the Promise Academy at the Martin Luther King High School in Philadelphia. Kate Shaw, Executive Director of Research for Action, thank you very much as well. And Christine Carlson, a public school parent, founder of the Greater Center City Neighborhood Schools Coalition. Christine, thank you for joining us on Ballot Talks as well. You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/radio times, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook, and how to follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.